Deborah, thank you so much for joining us.
Hello. Hi, Ruby.
And so Australian students spend more time online than the OECD, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, average, but are declining in terms of mathematics, reading, and science skills compared to the global average. Is this correlation, or is there a clear connection here?
Well, I think it's highly likely that it's connected. The big issue is not so much using that technology and getting information from it. The problem is getting that information and not thinking about it. I encourage my students to switch their brains on, not to switch their brains off. And I think what's happening too much is that students are getting answers to questions that they put into Google or something else, and they're not using critical thinking in assessing whether they should use that or not. So critical thinking's got not just acquiring information, it also involves analysis, reflecting on it, structuring arguments, debating, creativity and commitment also to find out what is the answer. And that's what we need to be training our students, how to be problem solvers and critical thinkers, not just how to search and find the answer.
How to memorize, of course.
Yeah.
Critical thinking is such an important skill and is almost always learnt when you're in school. So we are increasing investment in e-learning, which is indirectly reducing the requirement of teachers. Kind of seems like a automation type situation. So you are from the Department of Computing, but also an educator. So what do you think is the impact of just e-learning as compared to having a teacher teaching class?
Okay, well, I'm an artificial intelligence researcher. I also do stuff involving games and virtual reality. I don't see technology or AI as a replacement for humans. So when we talk about having e-learning, it is something to support the work that, the skills of humans, the knowledge of humans. It's never a replacement.
I guess more complementary than anything,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. So effectively what we're trying to do, particularly from an AI perspective, is develop machines, programs, that do intelligent things that humans can do, but often do it when humans aren't available. I'm not available 24 hours. I've got to sleep. I'm not always, if I get, asked the same question over and over and over, I might get a bit annoyed with that, but, you can ask a program that lots of times. So there's lots of things. I've been doing work in the medical space as well as the health space. And for an example, patients might with PTSD might prefer to disclose to a virtual character because they see it as less judging. But once they receive some benefit from dealing with that program, they also realise that it's worthwhile going and seeing a real human about their condition. So it's very much about working together. Machines doing what they're good at doing, people what they're good at doing, and using machines to really bridge the gap to help us keep getting good things from people.
Absolutely. So research suggests that reading from paper is a lot better, I guess, in terms of like consuming information than digital reading, and that it has an impact on our actual ability to read. So how do you think reverting back to paper would affect how kids learn?
I haven't actually been involved in those studies, so I'm not sure. I think an important thing is that each person is an individual, and also in terms of learning, there's a range of different strategies. So I wouldn't say everything. It's not black and white. You wouldn't, go back to paper with everything. I think, in fact, it's getting that balance of a range of different ways of learning. Back to this critical thinking. Talking to people about what you learn, So reading. I mean, there's also that saying about when you hear something, You learn a little bit, but when you get down to the other end of the spectrum and you're actually doing it, you learn even more. So, reading's really important, obviously, but it it, you know, there's a whole range of learning skills that we need to be encouraging using technology or without technology. We certainly shouldn't become over-reliant so that we can't do it without the technology.
Absolutely. There still needs to be kind of a sense of digital literacy there. So other than merely investing in solely investing in technology, what other things do you think should be focused upon by institutions, I guess, to bring about a change in results, do you think?
I think so learning is a social activity. It's, you know, knowledge that we have actually, you know, much of it is socially constructed as well. So, you know, we can use these technologies to connect one another. So, yeah, you don't have to, you know, if you've got a regional student, let them use technology to speak to other people in a virtual classroom. But you're still talking to that person. You're still engaging with them. So it is about getting, I think, seeing technology as a tool, as a medium to achieve things, but not as a replacement. And I think that's, and then also understanding that, you know, each person is an individual. So parents, teachers, okay, teachers are pretty busy managing a whole lot of kids. It's, you know, like in some work that I did looking at social media and its impact on children, we found that the greatest impact was in the mental health area, and this was affecting body image, self-esteem. So it had many positives, okay, connecting people, so I'm not saying it's all negative at all. However, for some individuals, you know, it may result what's called Facebook depression. We really need to be staying in touch with one another, in touch, you know, staying in touch with our kids, and I guess identifying, you know, are they getting the right balance of, I guess, human interaction and, acquiring knowledge for themselves and thinking things through, you know, giving presentations in classrooms to one another. So some work that I did with the University of Sydney, creating virtual worlds for science inquiry. So we created this virtual world, which we were using in secondary schools to learn how a scientist gathers information. And this was because students find it very hard to do science inquiry, to work at, you know, what's a hypothesis and how do we gather data and how do we decide things. But with this work, so while the students would use that virtually and explore the world and meet different characters and find out, you know, what the biologist thought and what the climatologist thought, in the end, so after they would explore the world and answer some questions, problem solving, then the teacher, so rather than the teacher at the start saying, this is what you need to know, remember this, and, you know, now go and put it into practice, this turns things around where it says, here's a problem, here's some ways of exploring that, some technology, information, whatever, however you're going to get that. Then after that, after the student has engaged their mind, the teacher then talks to the classroom. The kids talk to each other. What have they understood? What do they think the problem is? What do they think the solutions are? And the teacher goes through what's called a consolidation phase. So it's sort of flipping things around. And then the students give presentations to one another. And in that way, you know, you're making use of technology, but people are still, you know, learning and understanding. And in fact, what's been found is to do it that way, students learn much more deeply rather than superficial, shallow, rote type of learning.
Of course. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Deborah. It's been really great having you on the show to talk about this.
That's great. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure.